our platoon's first hit IED, going down a dirt road next to a canal, casual as ever. Then suddenly, boom! We feel a concussion, look forward, and our first striker has a big black cloud of smoke.
Having your son in harm's way is difficult. Feels like you're there with them.
19, 20-year-old kids who've given limbs for this country to understand the sacrifice that they've made.
Of course, you pray nonstop that God is watching over them and is going to bring him home and the rest of his unit home safely.
Who are the extraordinary men and women who bravely and selflessly defend life and liberty in far-off places like Iraq and Afghanistan? What drives these heroes, and how do their families and loved ones find the strength they need to endure? You'll meet three incredible service members and some moms and dads who love them today on this Life Issues radio special, Life and Liberty, calling a nation to prayer for our children. Brad Mattis is the executive director of Life Issues Institute.
Today we have the privilege of honoring those in our armed forces who are dedicated to protecting the freedoms we hold dear, particularly the right to life. Without life, all of the rights have no meaning. You're going to hear powerful and moving comments from those engaged in the war on terrorism, and you'll hear from those who love them. Be prepared to be touched. Be prepared to love your country even more.
Brad's son Nick is a specialist proudly serving with the U.S. Army in Iraq. Recently, Brad had the opportunity to speak by phone with Nick in Iraq, and we hear part of that conversation now.
Hi, Nick. So how are things in Iraq?
Well, we've been going through the towns and villages doing water assessments, seeing if the people in the villages have adequate water, medical supplies, schooling, sewage systems, things like that.
How's it been for you since you've been deployed? It's been since September, so you've been over there for several months.
For the most part, it's been pretty peaceful. The unit I'm with, stationed here, we've hit a couple of IEDs and things like that.
Tell me a little bit about that day that was the most memorable for you with that IED.
Our platoon's first hit IED, going down a dirt road next to a canal. We have our first striker in front. It has a three-man crew, just going down, casual as ever. Then suddenly, boom, we feel a concussion, look forward, and our first striker has a big black cloud of smoke. What happens next is a really blur flash. It went by very quickly. I was in the second striker. We pulled around to the front to pull security. We dismount. Got the guys out as fast as possible, did our combat lifesaver skills on them, patched them up. We put up a perimeter around the vehicles and waited for the choppers to come and take the crew to the nearest base for medical attention.
So what happened to the worst that were wounded?
The VC of the vehicle was hit the worst. The IED, which was two anti-tank mines and a 30-gallon jug of HME, which is homemade explosives, buried underneath the dirt, the vehicle drove over it. It blew a hole wide enough so a person like me could easily crawl through and out the top. And that blast sent numerous amounts of shrapnel into the VC's, the vehicle commander's legs, and his legs were all messed up. It was hard for us to get him out because the metal was pinning his feet down. But we did eventually get him out.
Now, Nick, when the day-to-day of the war dredges on and you get homesick, of course, for your dad, I'm sure that happens every day, the things that we have here in America that we take for granted, how do you get through the days when they're tough days to handle?
I try to not think about missing all the things back home. And also, I try to just keep my mind busy. I've always got friends that I can always talk to. From time to time, I do think about, you know, things I miss back home, friends, family.
Those rough days, have you found that the Lord manages to get you through them?
Yes, I have. On that epic day when we hit our IED, he definitely got me through it. And he got the crewmen of that vehicle through it. Because we went to go visit them in the hospital, and the vehicle commander who lost his legs was on the bed there, but he was still happy-go-lucky as ever, pointing jokes at people, laughing. He was in high spirits, which was very good for the platoon.
Do you feel like you've got a platoon of angels watching over you over there?
No, I think it's just more than just a platoon of angels. Because there are many many opportunities for whatever terrorists out there to get a hold on us or anything like that, but they haven't, and I think someone's been watching out for us.
Do you think you've accomplished your mission there as far as making the world a safer place, bringing democracy to the Middle East?
For the most part, yes, I do believe we have had a positive impact on our area. We've done personal training with the Iraqi police and the Iraqi army, gone out on patrols with them, showed them, you know, what they need to do, led by example, and they've slowly started picking up on it.
What do you want the Americans over here to know about why you're there? What message do you have for them, Nick?
The message I would say is we're slowly getting the job done. It is working. Maybe not as people might think, but we are getting work done here, and they shouldn't doubt what we're doing over here.
I just want you to know how much everybody loves you here.
Well, thank you, too.
There's a lot of people that ask about you all the time, so you're in their prayers.
Well, I'll be seeing them here real soon.
That's right. We're looking forward to it. We'll have all the ice cream and everything you're used to wanting to have here. Mom's cooking and everything. You just make a list and we'll fill it.
All right, I will.
Well, you stay safe.
I'll do my best.
Okay, I love you.
I love you.
You're listening to Life and Liberty, Calling a Nation to Prayer for Our Children, a Life Issues radio special. There's two more service members we want you to meet. Army Captain and Dr. Chelsea Hamilton is a neurologist who's been assigned to Walter Reed Army Medical Center in Washington, D.C.
Who I am is somebody who is passionately head over heels in love with Jesus, willing to go wherever I'm sent.
Soon, though, she's setting out for Afghanistan, having volunteered to use her gifts on behalf of our service personnel in harm's way.
This has definitely been an opportunity to spend some time seeking the Lord. I really feel like the Lord has been challenging me for at least a year and a half, going on 2 years now, to be willing to go when He says go, even if that means leaving loved ones and family and church. I have been in the military for about 7 years. The first part of those 7 years were spent on an Army scholarship at medical school, and the last two have been spent at Walter Reed. It is an amazing opportunity to get to work with some of these patients, surrounded by 19, 20-year-old kids who've given limbs for this country, to see their families, to see them, to understand the sacrifice that they've made. A lot of people talk about supporting the troops and about serving them and, you know, showing them that there's a nation behind them, but I have the unique opportunity to go and use the skills that the Lord's given me in medicine to bring people's sons and daughters and brothers and sisters back home. And the more I thought about it, the more I prayed about it, the more I really felt like it wasn't just a career move, but it was something the Lord had been preparing me for quite a while. I also have the opportunity, a trip to the Middle East where I take the Lord with me and have the opportunity to love on Afghanis, and it's something I feel like I can't pass up.
Hello, my name is Daniel Ruhlman. I'm a specialist with the United States Army. I'm a combat medic with 1st Battalion, 5th Cavalry Regiment, based at Fort Hood. And I will be returning to Baghdad, Iraq, tomorrow morning.
Dan Ruhlman has also seen his share of danger.
In August of 2007, we were patrolling an area in Baghdad called Amaria. And we were out on patrol one night, and we had hit an IED. It rocked us. You know, we got out. I did an assessment on who I thought was the most injured. We got the lieutenant out, started taking care of him, and I got told that the driver, Specialist Young, was still in the vehicle, was trapped in the vehicle and was unconscious. So I went back out and kind of surveyed the scene a little bit and tried helping him out and found out he was pinned. Well, in the process of trying to extricate him out of the vehicle, there was a staff sergeant, a member of the sniper team with us, still out in a combat zone. We'd just taken enemy contact, took off his gear so he could get back into a now burning fighting vehicle and pull this guy out. He did. He climbed back into the burning vehicle and worked it so the guy, Specialist Young, his legs were trapped by the driver's seat. Staff Sergeant Moore had gone in and kind of adjusted the seat so we could get him out. Young died later in surgery that night. Sometimes there are injuries that are incompatible with life, and unfortunately, it was Young's time. As far as heroism goes, Staff Sergeant Moore definitely sticks out in my mind. He got recommended for the Silver Star for valor. Acts of heroism and valor are happening all the time in both Iraq and Afghanistan. It's a good feeling to know that what I do can positively affect the outcome of the guys that I treat.
Daniel's father is David Ruhlman, Vice President at Salem Communications and General Manager of WAVA Radio in our nation's capital. David had a chance to have a dad-to-dad chat with fellow service parent Brad Mattis, and we have the chance to listen in.
Having your sons in harm's way is difficult. It's got to be more difficult for them, but you feel you have such empathy and you're so in touch with them that it feels like you're there with them.
David, you've got two sons who've served in the war. How did you prepare spiritually and emotionally for their deployment? I know that that was a real difficult time for myself and my wife.
You know, when your sons are getting ready to go off to war, I mean, I'd never experienced it before, but we gathered as many friends around us as we could and those that we worship with and prayed over our sons. And really what we wanted to do was send them rather than have them go on their own, but have them be sent out with a prayer covering from us as their father and mother and also from those that they related to in the church.
Was the week prior to their deployment really difficult for you? Because it really was for me. And I, you know, implored God to give me some peace and strength here, because based upon how I was feeling those days prior to his leaving American soil, I didn't think I could make it through the whole deployment.
Well, it's a tender moment for me right now, because my oldest son, Daniel, went on his first tour was one of the 15-month tours, and he came back just very impacted by what had happened over there. As a combat medic, he was in the middle of some things and came back with some emotional wounds. And then this is now his second deployment, and so he was just in Washington, D.C. recently, and we had to send him back after R&R. And then at the same time, within about 3 or 4 days, my younger son, Joshua, then packed up his family and moved down into Kentucky to prepare to go to Afghanistan. And so it was, Is it hard? Oh, yeah, it's hard. And I find myself every once in a while just having to stop and get a grip on my emotions.
You know, I've had that same thing. I've been going along fine, and then all of a sudden my heart feels like it's a 2-ton weight. Like it weighs so much, it's pulled itself out of my chest. And, you know, I seek the Lord at that time, and I say, Father, there's a bloody mess on the floor here. It's my heart. Can you pick it up and clean it off and stick it back in my chest for me? And somehow he seems to do that every time. It's kind of a minute-by-minute placing your future and your kids' welfare in the hands of the Lord and Savior, isn't it?
They're always there anyway, because we've committed them to the Lord when they were small and they came to know Him and walk with Him, and He is the only one that can care for them and keep them, and He certainly loves them a lot more than we do. Hard to imagine, but His love is everlasting and all-encompassing. And so I love the fact, I love what's gone on in America this round, where people welcome them home, and where people are putting into their hands, you know, Psalm 91 and scripture verses and praying for them. And I feel like there's a lot more connectedness to our sons and daughters that are at war this round than there was, you know, in Vietnam.
What would you say, David, is the one thing that people have done to help you as a dad with guys over there at war?
Well, I think everybody that has a son, and you know this as well, I you know, every one of us that has a son or daughter in warfare or war situation really needs to be undergirded by prayer and encouraged in every way. So I think that the people of God praying for those whose sons and daughters are in danger is most helpful. And then I love the fact that, you know, I keep running into people that tell me how they've sent cards or they've sent items to my sons to encourage them, and or they come up and say, here, I got this book of Psalms. Would you just send this to your son, or I'd like to send it myself? And just the support is just amazing. and encouraging.
What's most impactful for me is when you have somebody who looks you straight in the eyes and they say very seriously to you that I'm praying for your son, and you know they mean it.
Yeah.
And for me, that's a very helpful time.
Yes, it is.
How do you think people think about the war hostilities? Do you think that as far as Iraq is concerned, they think there's not much going on there? Because, you know, with Nick being stationed there and the close calls he's had, I know it's still a very dangerous place. And sometimes I get the feeling that people think it's just soldiers over there babysitting the desert while things are mopped up. But that's really not the case. What's been your experience?
About several months ago, they were attacked by grenades and while they were on convoy. So, no, it's dangerous, certainly. And my encouragement to Daniel this round was pay attention. Even though it seems peaceful, there's danger lurking everywhere, you know, so don't lose that alertness that you need. But here, I mean, it's fascinating because the media coverage of what's going on, it lacks clarity and always has. So that I don't think anyone really knows what is happening. I've had some people say, well, what do your sons think? I mean, do they think we've done a good thing over there? My answer is yes, they do. What's taken place over there has brought some stability to that nation.
One thing that I found it's important to do is communicate with my son that there's a lot of support over here because I send out periodic email updates, and I told him that people are really looking forward to receiving the next one, so I told him it's good that we're talking on the phone so that I can update, you know, my friends around the world. And he said, really? They're that interested? And I said, oh, absolutely. It was really good that I had communicated that because it was very impactful for him to know that, you know, Americans really do care.
Moms, of course, also suffer the worry and concern of having children in harm's way. Sheila Hammer is also on staff at Life Issues Institute, working each day with Brad Mattis. She has two sons and a son-in-law serving in the wars.
My oldest son that's in the Army, his name is Roger. He was in Iraq for 15 months. He went over there as an Army engineer, thinking he was going over to rebuild what unfortunately had been destroyed. Once he got there, he found himself a gunner on a Humvee. I have another son that's a Marine. His name is Ryan, that we aren't sure where he's going to be or what he's going to be doing. And we trust in their judgment, and we believe in God, and we just believe that he will watch over them, and whatever is to be will be. Roger, unfortunately, he has paid a price for what he did. He does suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder. He's dealing with it. Even with what he's going through, he still says he could never send his men back over there without him. He just wouldn't feel right. He today still says that if given the opportunity or asked to go, he would go again, that he truly believes in what we're doing over there. And when he left here, he had a daughter that was 3 weeks old, so he didn't have much time to spend with her. And when he came home, she was 15 months old. And before he left, we asked him, or I asked him repeatedly, are you sure this is what you want to do? Are you sure this is where you want to be? And he just looked at me and he said, Mom, I want to know that there's other children that will have the same opportunities that my daughter will have as she grows up. And as a mother, how can you argue with that? The pride I have in my son is there's no words to describe, especially my oldest son, having been there, and I know the sacrifices that he's already made. He left here this wide-eyed innocent, right out of high school, young man, ready to take on the world, and came back a different person. He's matured. He has a different insight into just the simple things that we take for granted in life. His family is the whole world to him. He believes so much in what they're doing over there. He doesn't hesitate to stand up and tell you what he thinks or how he feels. Again, I can't even express in words the pride I have in him. And then for my youngest son, Ryan, he made the comment he wanted to honor his brother. That's why he became a Marine, because to him, his brother is his hero. I can't even put into words how that makes me feel. I'm very blessed. My husband and I are very blessed to have two sons like we have.
So who are the men and women who defend life and liberty? And why do they do what they do?
When I was in high school, I talked to a number of people who were joining the military. Some doing Air Force, some doing Army Reserve, others National Guard. And I wanted to get right down in with the nitty-gritty and do my part to help out.
It's really an opportunity to go right to the land where so much is going on that's impacting this world, and especially this country. Just for 8 months to lay on my face in prayer and in fasting, asking God to bring His power into the land to restore those who've been so broken by war, but also asking Him to bring change so that the United States can be the nation it's called to be.
There's just that awesome respect that being in the uniform brings, and responsibility. Everybody takes an oath to protect the United States from all threats, foreign and domestic. That's a huge responsibility.
And there's a bigger picture, too.
Life is precious, and you know, we're not promised. I can't remember exactly who said it, but you know, yesterday is history, tomorrow is a mystery, and today is a gift. That's why it's called the present.
They were helping innocent people to have a life, to be able to experience some kind of a happy, normal life. Like my son says all the time, just so one child can have something, live some kind of a life like his daughter does. That's what was so important to him.
Every other heartbeat of mine, first is I want to worship God, and second is I want to defend the unborn. At home in America, we have seen since 1973 over 50 million children killed in the womb. And it is a travesty, and that blood is crying out before the Almighty. And as Christians, for the most part, we have been passive and we have been complacent, and it is not okay with the Lord. Everywhere we go, we need to be advocates for life, not just because it's a good political stance or we have a bunch of mental reasoning, but because life is precious to the Lord. And He has a plan for every child in the womb and outside of the womb. First and foremost, whether we're in Afghanistan or China or Eugene, Oregon, where I grew up, or Washington, D.C., and the halls of the Capitol, we must pray. We must be people of fasting. We must be people of passionate prayer, because our heart and our prayer is heard before heaven. And we can't do anything on the earth unless we've first been heard in heaven. And secondly, we have to become engaged. Because if we're not engaged in politics through peaceful activism, through voting, through supporting candidates that represent the Word of God, then we are not going to win this war. Because God has called us to be passionate for His righteousness and His justice. Because until we see the marriage of both of them, abortion isn't going to change. The protection of the elders is not going to change. And so if I had anything to relay from the passion of my heart to this country, it would be, Christians, wake up. This is our job. It's not our job to be violent in the natural. It's our job to be violent with our prayers and to be active with our politics and our social justice.
Once again, Brad Mattis.
This radio special was a turning point for me personally. People have often said, "You must be so proud of Nick." I would smile and say, "Yes," but inside, a fear outweighed everything else. By God's grace, after talking with Nick and hearing the others today, the pride I feel for what my son is doing for our nation finally outweighs the fear. Don't get me wrong, the dad's concern for his son still has a powerful presence, but God's peace is stronger. And I've been able to combine my passion for protecting unborn babies with my love for country and those who defend her. My prayer is you'll be a soldier for Christ in our efforts to protect the unborn, the weak, and the vulnerable among us. Stand up and be counted for life. My dad-to-dad conversation with David Ruhlman left a powerful and lasting emotional effect on me. And at first I wasn't sure why. Then I realized even after my son, God willing, returns home from Iraq, my heart will forever be intertwined with our soldiers on the battlefields. As a father, as an American, I'll always be profoundly concerned about the welfare of those risking their lives to protect our freedoms. I'm committed to praying for all our soldiers as long as they're in harm's way. And I ask you to commit to praying for at least the next 7 days. I've posted a tool on our website to help you. Go to lifeissues.org and click on the Life and Liberty link. There you'll find suggestions for 7 days of prayer for the protection of our troops, unborn babies, and all innocent human life. We especially want to pray for the families of soldiers who paid the ultimate sacrifice. We'll never forget it.